cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
Well, welcome to the February episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina. My name is Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinoui.
Hello.
And Rose Manley.
Hello.
Sorry. That hello just, was a bit survivalist, wasn't yeah, it? I mean it.
Yeah, Orla just on, you know, in the laptop, because obviously Orla Skypes in at the moment. She can do all these funny faces and be off-putting. And
yeah, I should explain.
She doesn't have to deal with consequences.
Rose and I are sitting together. Orla is in the Amsterdam studio, as she was last month. But, I mean, I assumed, Orla, in my naivety, that you would maybe take a month off the Cycling Podcast Femina. You reacted with horror when I suggested that you might want to sit out.
It wasn't so much horror. It was more just incredulity. Why would I? Just chilling,
FOMO.
Really. Pardon? I do have ridiculous FOMO. There's no way. I've just been sitting here catching up on cycling with a little one on my lap. So I figured I might as well talk about it. And also, I've got nobody to talk to at the minute. I'm on maternity leave. This is my chance to actually hear my own voice.
This doesn't augur well. Yeah. This doesn't augur well for the news roundup.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we should explain Orla's given birth since we last spoke. So
thank
congratulations,
you very much.
Orla.
Oh, yeah. I'm in danger of getting quite emotional.
Relieved.
Yeah.
Well, relieved to see that you've managed to pass your baby on to somebody else for the duration of the podcast.
That makes me sound terrible. My mother and my father are here at the moment visiting, so they are currently nursing little baby Austin and my firstborn downstairs. So yeah, I ran like the wind.
Wonderful.
For a little bit of time to myself.
Well, listen, we've got some interviews in this month's episode. We're going to hear from Lucinda Brand, silver medalist at the Cyclocross World Championships recently. Talk a little bit about that in part one. Going to hear from Katie Archibald, who's looking ahead to the World Track Championships and some interesting news on her plans for 2019. And then in the final part, we're going to hear from the recently retired Danny Rowe, whose retirement took a lot of people by surprise. So we'll hear why she decided to call it a day at the peak of her career. So we'll hear from her in the final part. But Orla, do you have a news roundup for us? Have you been able to keep tabs on what's been going on?
Oh, what do you think? Of course I do.
Well,
I know
the answer to that.
And it's not that long this time, actually. I've got a short attention span at the moment. It's probably a good
thing. Good, I've got my slow hand clap emoji ready here.
We've discovered that you're such a cheeky bugger. We've discovered that we can send emojis across Skype, except I'm rather limited. I've only got slow hand clap, tears, raucous laughter and a heart.
We're just being a bit more creative
with the use of them. Oh, that's fine. Anyway, yes, so on to the news roundup. So since last we spoke, we've had the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race. Cuba's Arlena Sierra got a great start to her season after her two World Tour wins last year. She won at the Tour of Guangxi last year and a stage of the Tour of California. We've spoken a little bit about Arlena's before. A fascinating background. She grew up in a sort of a little hut, by all accounts, sharing a bedroom with her grandparents and her siblings and whatnot. It's a fantastic story, her rise to the top. Lucy Kennedy then finished second, with Amanda Spratt third, fresh from her third win in a row at the Tour Down Under. Then Lucy Kennedy went one better less than a week later. She took the Women's Herald Sun Tour, winning a stage two, and the overall, with Spratt second on the stage and second overall ahead of defending champion Brody Chapman. I'm sort of reversing into the results of that race because Chloe Hosking won stage one ahead of B-Pink's Rachele Barbieri, with Lotta Lopisto finishing in third. So a great summer then down under for Mitchelton Scott, as you would imagine. And then we had, you've covered this in the regular cycling podcast, an absolute stonker of a cyclocross world championships. A brilliant race. Sané Kant showed very much that she can. Thank you very much. Winning her third World Tour in a row. I know, we've mentioned her name before and we've just never done that terrible pun and it felt quite remiss. But she's won her third world title in a row. Fantastic racing by her against a Dutch quartet. The quartet led by Lucinda Brand, who finished in second, a very tearful Brand. We'll chat about her in just a moment. Marianne Vos was going for her 8th world title on cyclocross, managed third. And it was 4th and 5th for the Dutch as well. Denise Bitsema in 4th and the European champion Annemarie Voorst in 5th. And then the other little bit of news that caught our eyes was Christian Prudhomme, the director of the Tour de France, basically saying that there wasn't a cat's chance in hell of staging a women's Tour de France at the same time as the men's. So for all of our, maybe not our, but the general annual speculation as to whether we're going to get a women's Tour de France, he's put it to bed. There's no point in talking about it anymore. It will not happen while he is director. And that's that. There is your roundup. Told you it'd be snappy.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa. Their support is much appreciated, of course. And Rafa have been teasing their new items for 2019. If you go to rafa.cc, you can see what's coming up from new shoes to arranged in collaboration with Paul Smith. There are new women's bib shorts, the Souplesse Race Bibs. Fancy a pair of them, Rose?
Yes, absolutely. I think Hannah Barnes got a collection as well?
She does, yeah. There was a Hannah Barnes collection launch. I think that might even be Hannah Barnes in the photograph there, modelling the shorts.
This is great podcasting.
So, rafa.cc, rafa.cc to have a look at what new items are available this year from Rafa, and there's some lovely stuff there. And it's, you know, not just clothing, but bags and things like that as well. Have a look. Thank you very much to Rafa. We'll talk about the cyclocross in a moment, but Lucy Kennedy is doing well, and we had an interview with her, of course, didn't we, a couple of months ago?
Yeah, I did that in when I was out in Taiwan, so it was last October. So I'm really glad to see her doing well. And also, I know that me and Orla both had to pick our ones to watch for Casquette magazine, which is a women's cycling magazine, if anyone hasn't seen it. And we both had to pick, and my choice was Lucy Kennedy. So I already feel that, you know, my choice has been totally validated by her amazing success so far.
Rose wasted no time jumping on that particular bandwagon. As soon as Lucy Kennedy had any kind of a result, yeah, then Rose is on Twitter. That's it!
That's
my
true.
Work here is done.
That's
for
true.
The year.
She hadn't even won at that point. I think she was like, got a podium, and I was like, right, everyone, like sending out, you know, all the other people who chose, like Molly Weaver, Rebecca Charlton, and Orla. I was just trying to, you know, get a bit of competition in it.
One up.
Who did you pick, Orla?
I went for Cecilia Tripp Ludwig, which isn't that an obscure
choice. No, it's not,
choice,
is it? Quite obvious,
thought,
one might almost say.
I just thought that she's one to watch in to a different level for next year. That's all. And I explained it very eloquently in Casquette. You weren't asked, Richard. We don't care.
That's, yeah.
I think
go and
my,
read it,
my
Richard.
One, my ones to watch, I think, probably Anna van der Breggen. And Annemiek van Vleuten, I think, would be my ones to watch. Anyway, and Lizzie Deignan, watch out for her. Anyway, what did we make of the Cyclocross World Championships? I'm not a big cyclocross aficionado by any means, but I did watch the women's race, and it was really good. And I happened to sort of turn the telly on just as they were lining up, and the screen was filled with the very determined face of Marianne Vos. And I was just watching her. And, you know, cyclocross does traditionally happen in terrible weather. It was right on the sort of edge of the ocean in Denmark. It looked pretty wild, windy, cold, unpleasant. And Marianne Vos is there with her race face on. And you just think, we've said it before, but everything she's done, nothing to prove. But I'm always impressed by just what a competitor she is. And she got a great start to the race, but it was such an open race. There were six or seven or eight riders who all looked to be in contention. And I think Sanne Kant was the one that didn't make any mistakes or made the fewest mistakes. And Lucinda Brand was very unlucky. She had a collision with her father in the pits on the last lap trying to change her bike. And that really knocked the stuffing out of her. She lost a bit of time and the chance to win the race. But Very entertaining race.
It was absolutely brilliant to watch, not least because it did come down to Sané Kant and four Dutch riders. I mean, the odds of Kant topping the podium amidst all of that would imagine could be quite small, except that it is Sané Kant and she's just proven fantastic in the last couple of years. I heard you guys talking about this in the regular podcast as well, about Lucinda Brand, and I'm not entirely sure, and I've been reading sort of the Dutch media here, and I'm not entirely sure that that one error at the end, which was a colossal error of Lucinda Brand and her father, her mechanic, taking her bike off her too quickly when she hadn't yet unclipped and she sort of fell over, but I'm not sure that entirely cost her the race. She did have a few very obvious slips early on, and I think the energy that it's got to take to come back up again from each of those times that she was sort of scrambling up the hill, I think would probably have cost her in the end. And to be able to overhaul Kant on a day like that, you would have had to have been absolutely flawless. And Brand made not just one, not just two, but three fairly significant errors. And that's probably, I think, part of the reason for those tears on the podium. I mean, it's quite dramatic when she was standing there. She was absolutely devastated. She probably realised, I mean, I think she went into this race third in the world. She'd won three World Cups, so she hadn't had a better chance at the world title, and realised possibly, I mean, we'll hear from her, but that she lost it herself as much as anything else. But the fact that it was so tight all the way through, it was just absolutely thrilling. It was brilliant.
And I think that Brand also said that what you've got to do at the World Championships is just perform on that one day. And I think that someone like Sané Kant has always proven that she can do that. I think she had a terrible cyclocross season by her standards, but she was made like an immaculate performance there. I mean, all of her bike changes were slick, and I think Lucinda Brand kept slipping on that same kind of off-camber section, and you know, Kant didn't make any slip-ups. She just played it very, was very tactically astute. I think all of the Dutch team seemed to take a bit of a spell at the front and tried to push the pace. But then that, when they did that, they kind of lost some of their own team members. So it kind of made you question about how much of it was working as a team, how much was it an individual effort. But I think Sané Kant just played it really calmly, and she kind of, I think she went, attacked a bit earlier than she actually anticipated herself, and just managed to hold everyone off. And I think, like you said, Orla, I think Brand kind of lost the, she didn't seem to lose that much time with that when she fell in the pit, but I think it was probably that energy. She was yo-yoing all the whole way through. I think Marianne Vos dropped back at one point, but only had to make one effort to get back on. And I think Brand was kind of yo-yoing so much that that probably would have taken its toll in the end.
I just wondered if her road strength might have told in the finish, which was, you know, the least technical part of the whole course, and that was where she was making up ground every lap. And so had she come into that finish with Kant, whether she would have, you know, been stronger there, and that would have been enough for her to win, because it was a yo-yoing performance. Mm-hmm. Worth mentioning Yolanda Neff as well, the Swiss mountain bike world champion from a couple of years ago, who's signed for Trek Segafredo this year, and I think will ride quite a lot on the road this year. But she came from way back, right up to that front group, and I think that effort probably told. But for a while, it looked like she had the momentum behind her, and she might be the one to you know, challenge to win the race.
And you mentioned Brand's skills on the road, but I wonder, conversely, whether we've been asking whether or not Lucinda Brand can continue to juggle the disciplines, and whether Marianne Vos can still juggle the disciplines as she used to do. And you've got to look at the fact that Kant is very much a cyclocross expert, and she, by all accounts, went off on a training camp just before the World Championships, and she hasn't had the same season that she's had in her past two World Championship winning years, but she's still able to concentrate on it. It is her pure discipline, really. And the fact that she's won it the last 3 years in a row maybe would suggest that juggling the two isn't quite as doable when it comes to the World Championship level, possibly at the World Cups, but maybe the World Championship is a step beyond.
Well, Lucinda Brand took herself off on holiday after the World Championships to try and get over the disappointment that she felt, but I caught up with her following her holiday, and here's what she had to say. Well, Lucinda, I don't know whether I should be saying congratulations or commiserations. How do you reflect now on the World Championship and your silver medal?
Oh, you can congrats me. That's fine. Yeah, looking back, and I also watched the race, I mean, it wasn't my best race in different ways, and that's why I think I'm a little bit more happy with my medal at the moment than I was right after the race. But of course, still, you always aim for more, and I learned at least a lot for the next time.
I mean, everybody focuses on the incident where you came off, you know, having collided with your father. Are you able to look at the whole race and identify, you know, other places in the race where you maybe lost out on the win?
Yes, exactly. So it was definitely not the only thing. I mean, okay, for a lot of people and maybe for myself also, especially straight after the race, it's a big point that you think, oh, that was really the moment where I totally lost it. But I think when I look back myself, it's actually started already straight away from the moment we turn into the field. And when I look back, I think I was too much laying back at that moment, and it was good to have a little bit overview from the back, but I could easily have moved up a few places more, which would have made it much easier for myself. And I think that's already something. I lost it a little bit. It was typically, of course, it's how farther you're back, how more energy you spend. I think it was not the biggest mistake. It's where all a lot of small things together, and then it just turns out it's not your day.
How's your father? Because he must have been upset as well, you know, and especially with all the attention that came after the incident. Have you kind of tried to reassure him as well?
Yeah. I spoke already a lot with him, and I also told him, like, yeah, you know, it's just, it wasn't my day, and I also could have gone a little early out of my pedals, and I just was working on limits on that moment, and it's not his fault. But for him, of course, it feels really different, and he has some struggles with it, so that's also hard, of course, to see. But yeah, I think more people will recognize that it's a really tough position he's in as a parent helping one of your children on the highest level, where it's always a different way of you're in the race. So yeah, he has it a little bit more tough with it. I think for me it's easier to put it on side than for him.
I mean, looking at it also, you won a bronze medal last year, a silver medal this year, that means a gold medal next year.
yes, yeah, we joked already with that also, yeah. Because even the year before, my first year, I became fourth, so the row is even longer than that. But yeah, of course, it should be great. But yeah, you never know how next season will go. Of course, if you look at this line, then it normal to think that it continues. But then everything has to go in the right way, and you should not come in any bad luck, of course.
And so what now, Lucinda? You have had a little holiday after the World Championships. Are you back into training already for the road season, or will you take a little bit of a break and start a little bit later? What are your plans?
No, yeah, I'm back on training. After Worlds, I took a week off the bike, just did some other things in the sun, which was nice to recharge a bit. And then I joined the team on the trains camp. And actually, this is the last training camp before the season starts, and then we'll kick off at the news plot again.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
The voice of Seb Piquet there reminds me to tell you that this month's episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina is sponsored by Harry's Razors again. Now, I endorsed the Harry's Razors last month. Shall I do it again?
Should we take a little closer look? Orla, come close to your screen.
It's badly pixelated, right? I'm going right up to my screen.
Wow.
I mean, it looks smooth. Rose, I'm gonna, is giving
yeah,
a little...
I will. Well, I can hardly avoid it because I'm about
this is ridiculous.
5 centimetres away from Richard's face now.
Anyway, Harry's have a special offer for Cycling Podcast Femina listeners by offering a trial set for £3.95. All you have to do is go to harrys.com/cycling. Rose, can you tell listeners what they'll get in the trial set, because you did that so well last month?
I did, and I was going to say actually that I did it a bit, it was a bit carry on podcasting what I did last month, but this is already descending. It's already descended. So I think my mentions of lubricating or whatever are just going to be completely on the same vibe as we already said. So the shaving set includes weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover.
So get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. Go to harrys.com/cycling right now. That's harrys.com/cycling. Well, on with the serious business. We're going to hear from Katie Archibald in this section. Always an interesting person to interview. You must have interviewed her quite a lot over the years, Orla?
Probably not as much as you, actually. You sort of go there on the whole Scottish front, but I have interviewed her a lot. She's brilliant, though, isn't she? And we do love her.
Wrapped in my soul tire.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's how entertaining she is off the bike as much as on the bike. Obviously, her pedigree on the bike is without question, but she's just so refreshing. And I think sometimes we're in danger of overplaying that with certain characters because we want them to be entertaining. But with Katie, I just think she's absolutely wonderful. I was reading she does this column in Cycling Weekly, and I was reading back on the recent entries this morning. And one that just caught my eye was so typically Katie Archibald, where she confesses to being in love with herself. And she doesn't actually, it doesn't get any better than that. She doesn't then come out with any faux humility. It's properly, I'm in love with myself. She says she was on a date the night before where she had a brilliant feeling because she came away from it thinking, I'm incredibly witty and I'm a brilliant person. And she didn't really care about the date. And she says, I get a similar feeling after interviews that have gone well. You can get a real buzz of satisfaction after half an hour spent talking to another human being exclusively about yourself. And I just thought, it's just brilliantly honest, because maybe lots of people actually think that, but would never be honest enough to commit that to print.
Well, that's maybe a good point at which to introduce Katie Archibald, and the listeners can judge for themselves whether she would have had a warm buzz after this interview. I spoke to her while she was at a training camp in Portugal just after the British Track Championships, where she raced pretty much every race, going from the sprint, you know, to pursuit and points race, everything, and medalled in most of the events she did. So very versatile as well. Her main focus, of course, is the team pursuit leading up to Tokyo, but she rode for Wiggle High Five last year, and I was curious to know what ambitions she had on the road, if any, this year. So here she was speaking from her training camp in Portugal. I mean, this winter you've mixed it up a bit, Omnium and Madison. You know, you've had success in both. Which is your preference?
Madison. I've laid my cards out and said I'm convinced I'm fantastic at team pursuit, so I want to do that, and I would like to be one of the two riders selected for the Madison as well. It seems really natural in the lead up to Rio that people ask, do you want to do the Omnium at Rio? And I'd say, well, yeah, of course, but you know, that's not how life is. And so I kind of always assumed that as my career would go on, people would ask you, do you want to do X, Y, and Z? And you say yes to all of it, because it's kind of like someone says, do you want to be a millionaire? Well, yeah, I'm probably not going to go out and buy stocks and shares every day of the week with that as my sole ambition, but it would be nice. I guess I'm not rolling over and saying the Omnium's gone, but if there's any way that I can get more experience, more focus, and just more of a chance to make it in the Madison by stepping away and surrendering that Omnium ambition, then I'm very willing to do that.
I mean, the Madison's your first love, isn't it? Do you consider it a better chance for you to win another gold medal than the Omnium?
Technically, yes, I suppose, but mainly because I see that... this is the kind of thing that you think in your head, and I don't know if you say it out loud. I kind of see that Omnium medal as Laura's. The only one of us would ride.
How about the, you know, beyond the Worlds this year? You obviously had a year with Wiggle High Five last year. I'm not aware of any announcements about road teams for you this year. What are your plans after the Worlds? What are you going to do for the road season?
Yeah, what am I going to do? I want to do some time trials. So all I really need is a nice time trial bike. And I'm in conversations for, I guess, exactly what kit I'll be in. Like, I rode Nationals as a BC unattached member. But really, there's no obligation. So I did have a good time with Wiggle High Five. They were a high-functioning professional team, Women's World Tour, and there was a big contractual demand that goes along with that. But yeah, I didn't want the burden, I suppose. And like, it was a totally justified burden. It wasn't like it was unexpected stress with Wiggle High Five. It was just demands of such a big contract. So
a team with a focus on road racing and on Women's World Tour events. And I guess you've had a couple of years with teams that have been focused on the road, I suppose. And did you look at, you know, perhaps other opportunities, or was it something you're happy to kind of step away from for this year anyway?
Well, do you know, when I was driving with WNT, it was actually a huge excitement for more and more and more. So that was a step onto a UCI team, step onto some World Tour races in a small team where I was given a lot of opportunities to be race leader. And I thought, well, I can stay here and I can maybe be race leader again, but I don't actually know what I'm doing, and who am I going to learn from if I'm the one calling the shots? It's just not going to work. So I thought I'll go with a bigger team, I'll get myself a domestic role, and just a series of unfortunate events, some of it poor planning, some of it injury, meant that I didn't have the year of young Padawan that I'd planned. And so that, I don't know, I'm on a bit of a downer about the road at the moment. Just, I'm not sure if, I always dreamed that one day I'd focus everything on it and try and make it as a road pro, and I'm not quite as captured by that dream anymore. Conveniently got another one for the track, so.
Well, I guess it's difficult as well, because with the Olympic cycle being the way it is, it comes around again quickly, doesn't it? And so now, you know, you're looking at the last year before Tokyo, and I guess you don't want to really compromise your focus on the track with the Olympics kind of close now.
No. Well, especially with Madison being a new event and just race experience being so important, like, I'll be putting a lot this summer into track racing. So, yeah, and it's not something that's been stressing me out trying to find a road team to sign with. I've kind of left it to be. I had a few options that just kept falling through, and, you know, a way where I guess it's because I'm saying to people, I'm really not that stressed, you know, so like there's no deadline on getting back to me on XYZ. And so I've just let things go on and on. And now I'm realizing, no, I should get a jersey put on. So, yeah, I'll hopefully have some kit by the first race I do. But like I say, I think it's just going to be time trials, maybe the odd UK domestic race. So,
I mean, could you ride the women's tour for Great Britain team or something like that? Would there be those sorts of opportunities?
I guess I've had that ambition. And there's the Tour of Scotland this year. So, yeah, there's the odd thing to kind of investigate. But like I say, I'm quite happy knocking my pan in on the track. Yeah, so, we'll see.
With regards to the British team and the track, do you feel like quite a settled squad? There's been, you know, one or two changes since the last Olympics, but Laura's back. She's a mum now. Is she any different? Has that changed her at all? And does it feel kind of like the same squad?
It doesn't feel like the same squad. Laura, I don't think, has been radically changed by mother. Obviously, it's going to change her perspective on the odd thing. I think she seems to have made her less stressed, maybe, because ultimately the most important thing in her life isn't team pursuit. Well, it is for me. I'm not going to go home and find more joy in my television than I am on the track. So, to be honest, I'm kind of paraphrasing just things that I've heard her say in interviews rather than genuine opinion that I've picked up from time spent with her. You wouldn't, like, it's the same Laura at training. But our wider squad, so we're a team of eight at the moment. We were nine until recently, so Manon Lloyd just left the programme. There'll be, I think, somebody will be leaving the squad after Worlds, and it will just continue to kind of become a smaller operation the closer we get to Tokyo. So this time, last Olympic cycle, we were five. That's basic math. I'll show you that the strength and depth has improved. And I guess with that, we can capitalise on more of an improvement, faster times, and hopefully more golds.
So that was Katie Archibald speaking from Portugal. She was as fascinating as ever, and I was personally interested to hear about her plans after the track world championships, when she's not going to, it seems, ride for a road team at all. She has the last couple of years rode for WNT a couple of years ago, and, you know, rode pretty well at the women's tour. Looked like she, with a bit more experience, frankly, she could be winning some big races. But, you know, you think about her maybe as a Kirsten Veld type rider. She's got a good finish, and she's got that same track pedigree. But it seems like she's stepping back a little bit from the road this year. Time trials will be her main focus, and she's not going to ride, and she hasn't even tried to get a ride, it seems, with one of the big road teams.
But I think it's something that you touch upon in the interview, Richard, about that the Olympics seems to come round so quickly. I mean, I can't believe, personally, that it's going to be next year. Like, next year is going to be the run-up to the Olympic. Right now, it's going to be the run-up to the Olympics. So I think it's difficult for the track riders really to give loads of time to becoming road race. And I think we'll talk about it a little bit later on as well when we've got not to give a spoiler, but when we're talking to Danny Rowe as well, about the fact that I think moving from track to road is a massive process, and it takes years and years and years to get the experience and the tactical awareness to be able to do it. And so I think that it's difficult if you know that you've got a good chance of getting medals at the Olympics to really devote yourself fully to doing any time on the road.
And I think as well, when we see riders managing that crossover, we assume that it's in some way easy and that the skills are cross-transferable, when they're clearly not. I mean, to go back to what we mentioned in part one about Lucinda Brand and Marianne Vos crossing over disciplines, it's not that easy. And you are up against riders who dedicate their entire careers to that one discipline. So to be able to straddle one, or straddle two rather, or three, is incredibly hard. And you say that Katie hasn't been actively looking for a ride on a road team, but it would also suggest that no one's come knocking with an offer either. I presume if they had done, that would have changed her mind somewhat. But if they haven't, then I guess if her heart's not in that, and it is the build up to Olympic year, then she might as well concentrate fully on the track and devote her efforts to that.
And this time, of course, as she said, she's got two shots at a gold medal, most likely Madison and Team Pursuit. And she and Eleanor Barker have been pretty formidable in the Madison. But, you know, it's an interesting one because they obviously all get on pretty well. They're quite a close team, Laura Kenny there as well. And there is, I guess, competition for places in the Omnium and then the Madison. And how they manage that is quite interesting because I don't know if, you know, Katie secretly hankers to ride the Omnium as well, but accepts that it's kind of Laura Kenny's event, she's got a pretty solid claim to that place in the team for Tokyo. But I know she's a big fan of the Madison, so she will be looking forward to that. It's just such a lottery, the Madison. I think the Team Pursuit is more, I say, nailed on. There's quite a lot of competition in Team Pursuit now as well, but it's a more controllable event, and Madison, lots can happen. And I think this also links to why she's maybe not committing so much to road racing, because road racing is dangerous, and she's had a few crashes. I mean, she was pretty bashed up at the Women's Tour last year. And when the Olympics are on the horizon, you want to sort of insulate yourself a little bit from the risks inherent in road racing, and that might be another factor. But maybe after Tokyo, we'll see her have another go at the road.
And obviously, of course, because she was at Wiggle High Five, I think a lot of the track racers there have done the same thing. So Amy Cuir and Annette Edmondson, I think they've all decided they haven't taken up with another road team. And so maybe that is the pattern for the track riders this time in the Olympic cycle, to step away and just stick with the track entirely. And
Rose, you were looking at what's happened to all the Wiggle High Five riders, because, of course, the team has disbanded. Have they all found new homes?
Most of them have, and most of them to pretty much the same level as they would have been at Wiggle High Five. But they are, I think it's Macy Stewart, Amy Cuir, Annette Edmondson, and Katie Archibald that haven't set up with another road team. But that, you know, I think you said earlier all of that Martina Ritter had retired, but apart from that, they are all staying in cycling. I think Amy Cuir is going to have her eyes set on Tokyo next year. So I think that, I mean, you couldn't, a lot of them went to Trek and WNT, that was for Brennauer and Wield. So they've kind of gone to teams as big as Wiggle for the most part.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for their continued support of the cycling podcast Femina, and their support for you, the listeners, by way of a 25% discount on all the Science and Sport sports nutrition products. Just enter the code SISCP25 at the checkout at scienceandsport.com to get your 25% discount. Now, this month's question for the Science and Sport experts comes from Alex Cohen in London. Hello, team. Alex from Finsbury Park Cycling Club here, long-time listener and friend of the podcast. Thank you, Alex. Question for the nutrition expert. I have a fast metabolism, non-scientifically proven, says Alex, but offers several bits of evidence to prove this. Should my fast metabolism make a difference to feeding strategy? Is it as simple as just eating more, or are there any more specific tips? Cheers, Alex. Over to you, Ben Samuels.
Interesting question this one, Alex, as we all respond differently to feeding in general and on the bike. The rate limiting factor in fueling during exercise is intestinal absorption of nutrients, in that the upper limit is thought to be around 90 grams of carbohydrate per hour, although it may be slightly beyond this number. Depending on the intensity and duration of your ride and your current fueling strategy, energy intake on the bike will likely be in the range of 60 to 90 grams of carbohydrate per hour from a range of options including sports drinks, gels, bars and other real foods. The drinks and gels, especially Science and Sport isotonic gels, are going to be rapidly digested and absorbed when compared to solid food options. So for yourself, it might be that slightly more solid food in the strategy works better, utilising gels and drinks when the intensity really turns up, either on the flats where it's tough or during the key climbs.
So we're going to hear in this part from Danny Rowe, the recently retired Danny Rowe. Met her in London recently. She was in London to meet with London Marathon, among other people. She's going to run the marathon this year, take on that challenge, although she was getting over a stress fracture from being a little bit too enthusiastic in her training for running. But, I mean, just before we hear from her, I think we were all pretty surprised, weren't we, when we heard that she was retiring after really a season where she seemed to have finally cracked it, the road. Because, well, we heard from Katie Archibald in the last part, you know, Danny Rowe was part of the Team Pursuit team at the London Olympic Games. That really made her name. She was then dropped by the programme and really a little bit lost for a bit, and she turned to the road, and it did take her quite a while to progress to a point where she was capable of good results there. And that seemed to happen last year. She rode extremely well, and it all seemed to be going in a very positive direction for her. And we imagine that over the next couple of years, she would maybe step up again. So she's chosen to retire, however, and I think we were surprised, weren't we?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, I mean, she speaks of herself that she was surprised herself by the results she got on the road this year. But I would have thought that that would have just signaled to her that that was the kind of breakthrough where she'd put in all the background work, all the background training to get results in the road. And these were finally paying off. And I would have thought that that would have been a springboard then to getting more results and being slightly... And also just having the place in the team that would mean that she could be the leader. I mean, she would have earned that support from her teammates after the season that she just had, that they would say, OK, Danny, this is your day. Whereas perhaps before last season, they would have been more saying, oh, maybe we should, you know, we should always ride for Marianne Vos instead. I was surprised that she was retiring from it. And she isn't certainly stepping, like she will say in the interview, that she isn't stepping away from being on the bike. It's not kind of being, it's not a fatigue from being on the bike. So I thought it was quite a, yeah, incredible decision at her age.
And we saw how she rode the women's tour alongside Marianne Vos, and it worked. It seemed to work incredibly well. The teamwork that they had, the cohesion they had. Danny was able to go ahead and soak up some of the Queen of the Mountains points and time bonuses and whatnot, and that stood her in great stead. Even though she had a crash on the penultimate stage, she still made it onto the third step of the podium behind Marianne Vos. And it seemed like that had all clicked into place. And as you say, her age, she's only 28. And if you look at the other notable retirees last year, they're considerably older. Georgia Bronzini, 35. Megan Guarney, 33. Martina Ritter, we mentioned earlier, who retired from Wiggle High Five, she was 36. Catherine Garfitt, 37. Lauren Hall, 39. And I was looking through as well the ages of the podiums in the Women's World Tour last year, just to see where the riders tend to be peaking in the female side of things. And she's bang in there. You know, you're looking at 27, 28 and up until sort of 32, 33. I mean, Van Vleuten is obviously the outlier. She's 36. But everyone else, you would place Danny Rowe very much as being on the cusp of continuing to win for the next couple of years. So For a number of reasons, I think we were all quite surprised. And I found her answers and her reason why, Richard, in her chat with you, really interesting. And a little bit, part of it anyway, I found a little bit depressing in terms of a reflection of where we really are in women's cycling.
Let's hear from Danny Rowe now. Favourite race?
Olympics.
Favourite teammate?
Laura.
Laura Kenny.
Kenny Trott.
Kenny Trott. Best DS?
Jeroen, Wild Deals.
Best domestique?
Rihanna Marcus.
Worst race?
Drenthe.
Favourite memory? Not apart from the Olympics, favourite memory?
Potentially the women's tour last year. Crossing the line after stage five, when I'd crashed really badly stage four, and stage five was probably the hardest race I've ever done, ever. Getting through that was amazing.
And finally, biggest lesson that you have learned from cycling?
Enjoy the journey.
Well, Danny, I mean, here you are in London, retired. Does that sound funny?
Yeah, really funny. I think retired, yeah, it's maybe the wrong word. Retired from professional cycling, but definitely not retired from work. We didn't get paid enough.
What did you, I mean, can you describe the process that led to you deciding to stop? Because it took a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, it was a really long and hard decision, actually, but definitely the right one. I think the Commonwealth Games was a big factor for me. That was the last major medal that I hadn't won. And I actually kind of thought before the Commonwealth Games, if I medal, I might just stop then and call it a day and, you know, really go out on a high. But I was really, really enjoying the process. I had a new coach and I was just loving the day-to-day job, I guess, of being a professional athlete. So I thought, right, I'm going to carry on and see the season out. And yeah, ended up having the best season that I'd had on the road. And then came to the end of the season, after the World Championships, actually, and sat down and just thought about why I would keep on riding. And there was two major reasons. Obviously, one, it is a job and it's an income. And two was to keep achieving. And I personally couldn't go on and just kind of do it for the money. It's too hard. You know, I sacrifice everything for cycling. It's a 24-hour a day job. And then in terms of achieving more, I kind of weighed up what would make me happy, because I think ultimately that was the most important thing for me, for my family, for Matt, my husband. And I thought anything that I could realistically achieve in the next year, or I guess 2 years up to the next games, which would ultimately be for sure my last race, that wouldn't be the case. I think the unexpected success that I had this year on the road made me so happy that, you know, whether I would win the women's tour next year or win a world tour race, which would, I guess, be quite a realistic target, wouldn't actually make me any happier than what this year's unexpected success did. And then weighing all that up, knowing what it takes to be on that start line in top form, I wasn't willing to kind of put myself through that again, and put Matt through that again, and my family through that again, because we have to live such a selfish lifestyle. And I really did put everything into it. I left no stone unturned. I couldn't do it. You know, I was always thinking about what I ate, what I was doing, whether I was on my feet too much, what time I was going to bed. You know, the day-to-day training didn't faze me at all. I could push myself to the limit, make myself sick on the bike, you know, go into the red. I love doing that, and I still will do that. But it was everything else that made me really want to start riding.
What was it that clicked for you last year? You had a few years at Wiggle. You moved on from there, which I think was a surprise as well, because you'd been a sort of a figurehead in that team, really, I suppose. Then you had 1 year at Silence, and then you seemed to find a new lease of life with Marianne Vos last year. Was there any one thing, or was just lots of things clicked?
Yeah, I think it was a mixture of things. I was getting really amazing support from Welsh Cycling in the lead up to the Commonwealth Games, so I had a lot more support from strength and conditioning coaches, for example. I had a new coach, Dr. Len Parker-Simpson, who's actually used to work for British Cycling, and he played a massive role in my kind of, I guess, improvements on the road, and then the team were amazing. I just clicked in the team straight away. Marianne Vos was such an incredible person on and off the bike, such a role model, and it was amazing to learn from her. And the support staff were great, and the girls were great, and everyone just, it was the first time that I felt everyone really committed to a role. I think that's, it's definitely improved in women's cycling, and I get why it happened, but people could be quite selfish in women's cycling because everyone needs those UCI points to get a contract. But in this team, it wasn't about that at all. It was just about, you know, really racing to whatever the DS told you to do. Everyone would commit 100%. And I think that's why I ended up doing well.
And that team has obviously become CCC for this year, and they look to have stepped up, made some good signings. You know, when you heard about those plans, was there any part of you that had second thoughts?
Yeah, actually, I had a conversation with Matt, and I said, "Oh, look, it looks so cool. The real step up, the collaboration with CCC and the men's team." But then at the same time, it was kind of like, this is what you're seeing on social media, and go back to basics. And that is that day to day, you're still going to have to put yourself through it, whether you're in a cool new jersey and you've got, you know, potentially more support and the sport is stepping up. At the same time, you're still going to be training day in, day out. And then again, like I said, mentally for me, it just takes over my mind. And I was ready for the next chapter.
And you mentioned last night when we were talking that, you know, your career, you've had success, but you've also had setbacks and disappointments and you know, being dropped by British Cycling, crash. You seem to have been on a real journey on the road to get to the point you were at last year where you were, you know, one of the best riders in the world and competing really well in the best races. How satisfying was that to feel that you'd conquered? Because I guess going onto the road was, you know, what you did after the track, and it seemed to be a real kind of project. How satisfying was it to feel last year that you'd kind of mastered it?
Yeah, massively. And that was, again, part of the reason, you know, I think that happiness I got on the road last year, that I kind of had, you know, I guess defeated odds along the way, and that I could then go out on my terms on a high. Because, yeah, like you said, I've been through a massive journey in my cycling career, you know, from being told I wasn't good enough on numerous occasions. You know, I started off on the Olympic Development Programme sprint squad. I got chucked off that. And then I went onto the endurance squad and was rubbish, having only sprinted for a year, got kicked off that. And then I applied for the academy 2 years running and was told both years that I wasn't good enough. And it was only down to the support of my parents who said, you know, as long as you want to keep going. And I always wanted to become world and Olympic champion. That was always my dream, I guess, as a young girl. I've always loved sport. And I just, for whatever reason, just had this inner motivation to keep going. And that's when we reached out to Courtney Rowe, Matt, my husband's dad, and he started coaching me. And then again, another setback in 2010, I had glandular fever. And when I recovered from that, I had about, 6 weeks to the national championships on the track. And I just put all my eggs into that basket. I was training three times a day. Went up to the track nationals and medaled in all of the events that I medaled in. And got an email from Paul Manning saying, did I want to come up and try out for the team pursuit? And that was it. Within a couple of months, I was part of the team that won the world championships. And it was just incredible in the lead up to 2012. Although there were, you know, ups and downs on the way. I'd have bad track sessions and leave the velodrome crying and phoning Matt or my parents to try and pick me up again. And it really is such a roller coaster of a life being a professional athlete. And then more setbacks again on the road with the crash and trying to become a road rider, which is a challenge in itself. I think track and road, it could be two different sports. They're totally different. So, yeah, last year, it was just amazing. I was the happiest I've ever been on and off the bike. Obviously, it helps when you're successful because generally, if I'm going well on the bike, I'm happy in my everyday life. And then vice versa, you know, with Matt, kind of happy head, fast legs, kind of what is what they say. And I believe that whenever I was in a good mental place, I'd be going well on my bike. And thankfully, that was pretty much the whole of last year.
You say that there was some inner drive. What how do you explain that? What do you put that down to? What was the thing that stopped you from giving up and keeping on going?
A lot of people ask me that, and I think it's such a hard question. I remember, for example, when I used to swim before I used to ride, my parents said, we'll always support you through your swimming. And I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning before school for the sessions. But they said, we'll happily take you to swimming, but you've got to wake us up. And I thought that was amazing because it was always me that wanted to do it. I was never dragged or pushed or forced into anything. And it always came from my want to do sport. And I think that was almost like the start and the foundations of, yeah, becoming an athlete, I guess. Mm. And then, yeah, I don't know. I think it was this dream that I'd had. I'd watched the Olympics and had so much awe for professional sports people that I just didn't want to give up. And I guess I just had this part of me that thought, you know, you can do it. I had a lot of belief from, you know, again, outside of British cycling, that saw my potential, I guess, that said, you know, you can do this. You know, you've got a strong mindset, you've got a strong kind of work ethic, and just keep going. And I'm so glad that I listened to those people and yeah, kept going.
And when you look back now, what stands out? Is it the Olympic gold medal? Does that stand out as a highlight for you?
Yeah, but also other kind of smaller races, really insignificant races to, yeah, the general public. So I guess the Tour of the Reservoir, which is a race I won, the first race that I rode after my crash in 2014. To me, that was huge, and it gave me so much confidence then because I was really scared when I got back on the bike. So that was a big one for me. But yeah, obviously the Olympic Games and my first World Championships in Apeldoorn was just incredible. You know, I can't even describe the happiness and how I felt at the Worlds and obviously at the Olympics. And I felt happy for not just myself, but for everyone, you know, from Matt, who had to put up with me throughout the whole process. And I was a nightmare to live with. You know, you almost did get brainwashed into this bubble of a life, and you never wanted to walk anywhere. And yeah, my parents, who would get a phone call from me after a track session that I'd been dropped in, where I thought, oh, this is it, I'm not going to get selected. So, you know, they had to pick me up every single time. So it was amazing to just share that, you know, success with them as well. And they were lucky enough to be there at the games. And yeah, it's a moment I'll never forget.
After that, I mean, you know, if you could have, you know, imagine yourself back then on the podium in London, and there was all, you know, sorts of things, celebrations and stuff going on. It was a pretty magical time, wasn't it, in London? Back then, how did you see your career going from there? You know, if you know, did you have thoughts about what you wanted to do? Did you want to try the road, or did you think you were going to stick to the track? What was the plan?
I was quite open, to be honest. All I knew is that I wanted to keep riding. You know, I was only 21 at the Games, and I was really motivated by seeing improvements in training. I was quite a numbers-driven person, so I like to see, you know, power PVs and things like that. But I'd always really enjoyed the road. I'd raced a lot before I started track riding. I was on Nicole Cook's team, Vision 1, in 2009, and I really, yeah, enjoyed that and thought that potentially I could be okay at it. So it was never not an option to try the road, but I did envisage myself staying on the track for longer than I ended up doing. But yeah, I think things happen for a reason, and it's all panned out, yeah, perfectly in my eyes, through the ups and the downs. And I just feel privilege, really, that I've been able to go out, like I said before, on my own terms, in a really good mental place with the sport. I don't look at a bike and think I never want to see a bike again. I look at it and I love it, and I'm still riding my bike. I'll still carry on riding my bike. I want to try and get more people on bikes, girls especially, and it's really, really growing. I'm obviously run a coaching company, Rowan King, alongside Matt and Luke and his dad, and I think it's amazing to be able to still love it. I haven't been told that I'm not good enough. I haven't had an injury that's forced me out of the sport. And I just think, well, you know, how amazing is that? What a privileged position that I'm in. And I think that's why so far I haven't struggled with it at all.
How hard was it just going back to, you know, the London Olympics made you a kind of a star and famous, and there were lots of doors that opened as a result of winning a gold medal in London. How hard was it then to sort of almost go back to the beginning and you know, go to the road and not have the same success, certainly immediately, you know, and really commit yourself to doing the hard yards to, you know, almost start at the beginning again?
I always just worked so hard, and I think it didn't really change just because of kind of doors opening for me. Obviously, that was incredible that we got the opportunity to almost be treated like stars for a few weeks or a month, but we were kind of straight back into normality. I had a World Cup in Glasgow in October, I think it was, after the games, and we were straight back into kind of the normal everyday training life. So I never really thought of it as, you know, going back to basics. What I did do is miss the success. I definitely got to a point before last year where I thought, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself through this every day? And I'm not getting any return for it whatsoever. And I did struggle. I struggled mentally. But at the same time, I still loved it. I loved putting myself through that pain. I think because I was seeing improvements all the time in my physical performance, I think a lot of it for me was down to learning how to ride on the road. So talking to teammates and things, I think I had the physiology and the power to be able to be competitive. And I think that's what kept me going, just to keep going, because, you know, things will come together. You'll learn how to race, and then hopefully you'll get that success. And I think that's what then clicked last year. But for a few years, it was hard because I was watching the girls on the track and I was thinking, oh, I just wish, not that I was there, but I just would feel that sense of, you know, achievement and success that I put myself through this for. But then at the same time, you know, I've always been taught that there's people that are training just as hard as you, and they'd love to be in the position that you're in. And that always made me think, oh yeah, I'm lucky. I'm at the top of my sport still. I'm still competing in the best races in the world. And there's other girls that are training just as hard as I am, and they're not where I am either. So that helped me then, I guess, get perspective on it. I was watching, you know, Laura and Joanna and the girls on the track, and it's just because I'd been there, you know. But then that gave me perspective that, yeah, well, there's other people working as hard as you, and they're not as where you are, so.
I guess women's cycling's been on a journey as well, almost, you know, from 2013 with Wiggle, and then, you know, other teams sort of springing up. Have you been aware of the progress that's been made? What's your kind of assessment of the health of women's racing at the moment?
Yeah, massively. And I think I've probably been in it in terms of the growth for the best years, because I started, like I said, I was racing in 2006-07, really early days, and then I rode for Nicole's team in 2009, guested for Great Britain on the road in Tour of Flanders 2009-2008, and it's come such a long way in 10 years, and I just think we can't forget that. It's still got a long way to go, but at the same time, I think we've still got to be positive about, you know, how much it has grown. You know, I've seen that firsthand. I've been in the races for the last 10 years, obviously on the track, not so much, but we still did race. And yeah, it's just incredible, especially the level of the women's race, and it's just gone from strength to strength. And obviously that comes down to, you know, more sponsorship and more girls being able to ride their bikes full time. I think that's the biggest change. When I started racing, I don't think many of the female peloton were riding full time. So yeah, it is great to see. It's just the coverage, I believe personally, that we need to really push. But yeah, it's great. It'll be nice to kind of be on the other side this year. I'm hoping to be able to commentate and be at some of the races.
So that was Dani Rowe. Interesting to hear her. I mean, on the one hand, she is sort of privileged and lucky and unusual in being able to stop at a time of her choosing on her own terms and when she feels she's at the top. And for all that we, from the outside, look at her results and her performances last year and think, oh, she's made it, she's found the magic formula, we don't know how hard that has been, that journey has been, and how much that daily commitment takes out of her. And that's something that is clearly a huge factor. The lifestyle required to be maintained is difficult, takes a toll, and perhaps she felt that she just couldn't go on doing that. But, you know, we're talking about some of the other riders. I mean, Annemiek van Vleuten has been dominant the last couple of years, but at age 28, she was winning Plouay, for example, and, you know, posting some decent results, certainly, but it took her until her mid-30s, really, to properly realise her potential. And I think if the female riders in particular, we're seeing riders in their 30s ride extremely well, I wondered if she would come back, make a comeback at some point. You know, a couple of years out, maybe she'll decide that she's still got something to give and she might miss it. What do you think, Orla? Will we maybe see her come back?
I'm not so sure. I wouldn't bet on that outcome, really, because the way she spoke about the difficulty of the lifestyle was quite convincing. And she said herself when CCC was announced that she thought, actually, that could be pretty cool. But she made that distinction between how it looks from the outside, so, for example, on social media, and how it actually is on the inside. And none of us have any idea what it's like on the inside. We've no idea physically, mentally, emotionally, what it takes to get to the level that she got to. And that seems to have been the deciding factor. And when I said that there was a little bit depressing in what she said, I don't want to overplay that. But, you know, she did say that if it was just for the money, then it wasn't worth it. That none of that was worth it just for the money, that it was for the thrill of winning. It was for pushing herself, which is a wonderful human endeavour. But ultimately, we all have to earn a living, and it wasn't then worth her putting herself through that. So I think we're often in danger and guilty of looking from the outside and thinking that it's rosy or it's easier than it is, or they're living the dream to more of an extent than they actually are. And it's bloody difficult. And I think she just thought, well, actually, I've achieved enough. What else do I need to prove? Which is a wonderful, wonderful way to step away from anything.
When you've won a gold medal at London 2012, I think that's kind of becomes a hard thing to top. And I think I've heard other athletes now, not necessarily ones that I can't even remember who it was, but someone in a kind of a similar situation retiring around about now, and they would say that their highlight was winning in that London Velodrome home crowd. As a British athlete, yeah, sorry, I should say that. Winning on a London Velodrome, and, you know, packed crowds, the expectancy was on them, and then they won, got all these gold medals, and like crossed the whole, all of the track cycling team, there were gold medals everywhere. And I think that would be a hard thing to beat, especially in the women's peloton, where the Olympics has a higher ranking than for male cyclists, I say.
That's a really good point, actually. And we forget the level of euphoria and the high that would have induced. I mean, you look at when they won the Team Pursuit, for example, in 2012, you had Paul McCartney was in the Velodrome. I think Stella McCartney was there as well. I mean, it was something so incredibly special that maybe you spend the rest of your career trying to chase that. I mean, that was what we called Super Saturday in the media. And it was such an incredible moment to be a part of, even just to be there and witness it, never mind to be a player in it. That would be something that you would find yourself, I guess, chasing for the rest of your career.
And what could you even pencil in that would come anywhere close to that as a female cyclist? I mean,
outplanking Richard. Yeah.
But then that's what I certainly have admired about what Danny Rowe has done post London, when she did have the disappointment of being dropped by the British track program and reinventing herself as a road rider. And that was a process that involved struggling and suffering, and not, you know, it certainly didn't come easy to her. She had to work really, really hard at it. And
not taken to Rio as part of the road team as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And quite a contrast from the glamour of that occasion in particular to some of the road races, let's face it, on the calendar, which are anything but glamorous. But she, you know, she endured all that and finally felt, I think, last year. And I asked her, you know, favourite memories from her career. And obviously London is one, but she mentioned other far lower key highlights, you know, such as the women's tour last year, where, you know, she had a bad crash with a day to go, didn't she? And then it was touch and go that she could carry on, and she did, and finished on the podium. I think performances like that and suffering like that and the result at the end of it gives her probably as much satisfaction as that Team Pursuit ride in London. But yeah, I do wonder whether in a couple of years she might come back. She was off actually to visit her old teammate Emma Johansson in Sweden, who's become a mother quite recently, hasn't she? So she was off to visit her, and I think she's certainly enjoying for the moment the freedom that you have having stepped off the treadmill. But, you know, for a lot of them, and especially if they're young enough to do it, a lot of them after a while do yearn to get back into it.
Well, maybe she'd do triathlon. She said she was going to run and swim. Mm-hmm. Maybe, and there's, you know,
And it's great that she's got those physical challenges as well for her retirement year. I think that's incredibly important mentally and emotionally as much as anything else. I think she seems to be tackling it the right way, if there is such a way.
I hadn't realised that her father was a Winter Olympian biathlete, which is interesting. Anyway.
She went skiing recently, I think, for the first time.
Right, Orla. Yeah, yeah. So maybe we'll see her in the Winter Olympics. Should we, should we wrap things up next month, I'm sure?
Oh, do we have to?
Yeah, we do.
I have to go back to baby feet.
Well, next month I think we'll have some kind of race action, won't we? I don't know, maybe you'll be out and about doing some interviews over there in Holland, Orla, in the next month.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Why not?
And are you going to any races, Rose, in the next month? Put you on the spot a bit.
I know. I'm just trying to tick through. Not any women's. Right, I think Strada Bianca might be my next.
Strada Bianca, so maybe we'll have something from there. Yep, that'll be for next month.
Yeah, but yeah, I am coming out to Holland though. I'm going to see Orla in Amsterdam next week. So that is
very nice. Very nice. Yeah.
We're going to live it up in Amsterdam.
Yeah, another
me,
escape
Rose
from the baby.
4 weeks
old. Oh no, with the baby this time.
I don't think I've got anybody to leave him with. That makes me sound incredibly unfeeling. I should say I'm madly in love with my little man. Oh. Just to clarify.
Just before people are picking up the receiver to social services. Put that phone down. She is looking after the baby.
Well, have a nice rendezvous in Amsterdam next week. And as I say, we'll bring some race action to next month's podcast, which will be out sometime near the start of March, I believe. So that's all for now. Thank you very much, Orla.
Thank you very much, both. It's been a joy.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.